Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. Today we've got the first of two casts that we recorded at the same time. This one is around the issue of awareness. And by awareness, we mean awareness of self and awareness of others. And the importance of that underlying awareness of self and others to become effective leaders and managers. And indeed, partners and all-round good human beings. So as I say, we recorded this one and the next cast that will be coming out on authenticity. We recorded them at the same time. Here's awareness. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub. Joining us in the hub this week is Lisa, Gary and Sophie. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hiya.
Hello.
The usual cacophony and orchestra of hellos there. what we'll do next time is we'll have to pick a character and we have to say hello in character.
I'm up for that.
Be a little challenge. And you can dress up as well if you so wish.
Oh, not again. They've got the clown outfit.
It's the big red nose, you see. I keep bumping it off the microphone. So before we get started, I've just got a couple of items I'd just like to mention. Number one is a public health announcement. Do not say that we don't do the best for the public here on Leaders and Managers of the podcast. So in the current situation with COVID-19, I have a little bit of advice for people. If for some reason you end up with a little cut or an abrasion on your hands, please remember, ladies and gentlemen, that that is there before you use the alcohol-based hand disinfectant for the first time. Because if you don't, I can guarantee you, you'll certainly remember it for the second time. We've got the song for washing our hands, and I've now got a little tune for disinfecting my hands, which goes along the lines of, extremely painful. So that's a little public health broadcast there on behalf of Leaders and Managers of the podcast.
That is the dangers of alcohol.
Yeah, well, and I'm actually sitting there, you know, through all the fog of pain, screaming like a child, but actually thinking, I wonder if I absorb the alcohol through this cut on my finger. How quickly would I get drunk? Because you know about medical students, right? The old anecdote about medical students using douches to get themselves drunk quickly. I did wonder, but I don't like alcohol enough to want to dip my finger in a glass of whiskey.
Don't sanitize and drive. That's the you're doing.
Yes, indeed. See, that's for the things we do for society here. And the second one was, it was just a little experience that I'd had myself, not last week, but the week before. So I did the Transactional Analysis 101 with the Burn Institute, and we did it over Zoom. And it's really one of these training courses whereby it really works very, very well when you're all co-located in a training room, because there's so much you can do. And I'd never really attended an interactive training course online before. And I was a bit apprehensive, but I have to say it was an amazing experience. And I think Adrienne Lee, who was the trainer, she facilitated it marvelously. And it was really a wonderful experience. So I'm really sold now on training via online means. I think it's a really good idea. But is such a closed word. And because of that training, during all that training, We were talking about all sorts of different concepts to do with psychology and using specifically transactional analysis modality. And I kept coming back to the whole question of awareness, because there was, it's the fundamental basis of anything like this, any psychotherapies or whatever you do, even coaching as well, I would suggest. You need to have quite a good element of awareness to underpin it all. And that's awareness of self and awareness of others. And effective transactions and communications, whether it's personally or professionally, do require you to have quite a mature sense of awareness. And so I just wanted to use this cast as an opportunity to talk a little bit about awareness. You know, what is it? How do you get it? Where is it available? Can you buy it on Amazon? Is it something that you just suddenly click in and it's suddenly there, or is it something you continually have to work on, etc. So I'm very keen to hear Lisa, Gary, and Sophie's takes on awareness. Let's start with awareness of self first, because it's very difficult to have awareness of others, I think, unless you've got a sense of self-awareness. So awakening awareness for me occurred. So when I was in my 20s and early 30s, my life was very much focused around providing for my young family at the time. And so therefore it was all about, I was very task oriented, and it was about earning a decent living and doing enough to be able to support that. And I had always had an interest in psychology and had an interest in people. And so there was a baseline of awareness there, but I hadn't really truly appreciated awareness of self at that point. And through my 30s, for various reasons, which I won't bore anyone with, but I had a number of experiences in my life which caused me to question things about myself and, you know, why did I make that decision? Why did that happen? Et cetera, et cetera. And the more I started to ask myself questions, I was saying, like, why do I react in that way in that particular circumstance? And so I think over a period of time, I started to awaken a self-awareness for me, awareness is about asking oneself and being open to answering oneself in relation to, why do I feel that? In this particular situation, I've had this emotional reaction. Now, maybe that hasn't been obvious to anybody. Maybe it's just been within myself. But to start to ask myself the question, first of all, what was that feeling? And then to try to understand, then once I've figured out what the feeling is, try and understand what's created that feeling within me. What's just happened that's made me feel that way? And then now that I know what the trigger was, what is it that's actually driving that reaction in me? So is there something from my past or a learned experience or whatever it might be that has caused me to react in that way? And then to take the question of, is that reaction suitable in this context? Is it an appropriate reaction given that individual circumstance? And so that for me was my journey into awareness. I suddenly started to look at everything I was doing, what the triggers were, where I felt that reaction within me was coming from. Is it the most suitable and effective reaction for that particular stimulus? And what could I do to make it a more effective reaction? What can I change? So that was awareness for me. Does that strike any chords with anybody?
Yeah, I think self-awareness is something that it almost just kind of, it doesn't kind of leap out at you suddenly, I think. I think it's something that over time, gradually it kind of builds up, and you might then get to a point where you recognize a lot more about it. But I think we all actually sort of have it. I think it's just noticing it. And sometimes it takes other people to tell you something about yourself, and then you notice more that, oh yeah, okay, I hadn't realized that, or yes, I did really know that about myself. So I've always been someone who's been an observer of life. It's not that I don't sort of get stuck in and do things, but I've been fascinated by people and watching, learning, being really nosy. But I've known that for, you know, since my teens.
I think it's given a label for me. It's probably something I feel like I've had or been aware of for a long time. Just didn't always realise that it was self-awareness, if that makes sense. So it's a bit like everything. It's just kind of, it now gives a label to questioning what I do. I question myself a lot. I used to see it as a bad thing. Now I don't quite so much. So it's kind of recognising now that that is much more about making sure that I question the decisions I make. And I always try and have at least three reasons as to why I've given the response I have. And then I'm confident that I've made the right decision. And whether that's yes or no, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. But things like reflecting on moments. It's a bit like you said about letting moments pass, where you don't really realise how you felt then. You just do it. And I'm definitely a person that does stuff. So if things need doing, I will just find a way to get on and do them. And quite often it's not until sometime after that I allow myself the time to think about how that situation actually made me feel. But quite often I'm reacting to stuff a lot, whether that's at work or at home. And I think I've got better at doing that as I've got a bit older as well.
I was actually quite closed to it. And what I found was that I trained myself to not really allow emotions and feelings to be acknowledged within myself. And so actually it was doubly difficult for me. Oh, please feel sorry for me here. For me to open up the whole self-awareness, because with that I had to acknowledge quite a lot of discomfort and allow in feelings and emotions that I had absolutely closed down for decades. And I'd done that closing down to protect myself psychologically and emotionally. And so the awakening of awareness for me was a double-edged sword, in that with it came a lot of enlightenment, but also with it came quite a lot of emotional pain. And I think for a lot of people, sometimes it's very difficult to open up that Pandora's box of awareness, because it's very hard to put the lid back on it again. And sometimes we have this psychological safety of, well, you know, let sleeping dogs lie, so to speak. But the long-term damage of that is that you deny yourself those emotions and feelings that you actually ultimately need to address. And for me, I actually needed counseling to help me with unlocking that box, because I was so resistant to it. But actually, it's been such an enlightening and enlivening experience. I'm so glad I did it. But for a lot of people, it's not so easy, because there is a lot of pain and trauma and stuff like that in there that you can't, when you become aware and you almost give a voice to your inner feelings and how you operate and how you behave, it's not all roses in the garden. I think for all of us, there are elements of light and dark, you know, of light and shade. And we kind of have to accept that about ourselves. I think self-awareness comes with a strong requirement to self-accept as well, that it's so easy to criticize ourselves and say, oh, you know, I'm really not happy with that about myself. But sometimes part of being self-aware is to acknowledge that, okay, so I know where that's coming from and I can't change the past. What I can do is I can change the way I react to certain triggers to make them make it a more effective transaction going forward.
I think that's really quite a key point for me, Ray, because as you were talking about this when we first started, I felt that self-awareness takes a lot of courage to even dip your toe into, because you don't know what you're going to unearth, and you don't know what that self-awareness then means for who you are. And when I think about my self-awareness journey, you know, having been in HR for many years, you come across all these different assessments you can do, the Myers-Briggs and the Belbin assessments and Thomas International, you get a whole ream of stuff that is there and available to provide you with some data about yourself. And sometimes you can get that information and you can kind of take it on face value. But actually, the real courage comes from when you really sit and reflect on that. And instead of dismissing what you're hearing or what you're observing or noticing about yourself, is to really sit with that and say, oh my gosh, is that actually the way I'm showing up in this scenario? Am I actually choosing to operate from this path rather than the alternative? And I think when you put that into the context of being a leader or a manager, I think it's actually our duty to have a high level of self-reflection and to have that courage to become the better manager or leader in the workplace. But I'm not sure that we're all in that position of being comfortable in terms of courage to do that.
Yeah, there's something interesting you said there, Sophie, how you want to show up. And Helen Elizabeth Evans. So Gary did a conversation with Helen Elizabeth Evans recently. It's out in two parts, people. Go and listen to it. It's an absolutely fascinating listen. And one of the things Helen was talking about in there was that about how you want to show up in a given situation. What version of you do you want to put into that scenario? And one of my challenges, and my counselor has you know, talked to me about this at length, is I tend to overthink. So I sometimes, and I use this analogy a lot, there are times when I sit and reflect upon myself, and it's almost like a scientist looking at a lab rat in a laboratory, and I'm like, oh, that's very interesting, and I'm turning it over in my head and examining it. And sometimes that can be a little bit too much, because then you get stuck in a cycle of analysis, action, and actually there's no outcome. It just goes round and round in a loop. So I would caution as well with it that for people who are mindful to seek a bit of awareness, just be careful that it's not an opportunity to put yourself in a seat, interrogate yourself and beat yourself up for all of the awful behavioral atrocities that you've ever committed in life. It's not about that. It's about what you're going to do tomorrow that's going to be more effective than today. And so in any journey like this, you come across stuff that is really good, and you come across stuff that you don't want to precipitate, and you come across stuff that just needs a little bit of tweaking. But it's that conscious decision of, when I turn up to work tomorrow, or when I turn up in my relationship tomorrow, how do I want to be? What version of me do I want to present to the world or to my partner or whatever? And that's very, very key, because I think that's something you've got to reflect on quite early on in the process. Who do I want to be? What version of myself do I want people to see? Almost like, imagine it from the perspective of, if I was listening in to somebody talking about me, what would I want to hear them saying about me?
I also think with that, particularly when you take it from a workplace context, that one of the greatest gifts you can have as a leader and a manager is that of high emotional intelligence, and to be able to recognize how other people might be saying one thing, but their actions and their body language aren't quite congruent with each other. And I think to have that skill, you cannot recognize it in other people if you cannot recognize it in yourself. And I think that absolutely has to come from you first. And the point you were saying around that kind of that cycle that you sometimes get into, I can absolutely recognize that on occasions with myself when that's happened. But I have to take the step back and ask myself, how am I choosing to sharpen this situation? And how does that manifest itself then in the attitudes and behaviours of the people that I'm leading? And can I have awareness over that if I'm not even aware of how I'm behaving right now? And it's quite a sobering point for me on occasions where I've perhaps got a narrative in my head that I've told myself, which may not actually be true, but I've kind of reinforced a self-limiting belief. And actually, when I think about it from a self-awareness perspective, and I dig a little bit deeper and ask some of those questions, you know, opening Pandora's box, as you said, Ray, sometimes it does feel like that. It can actually feel quite liberating to free myself from those thoughts, realise how I'm showing up, change my behaviour, and then see the difference in the people that are experiencing how I'm showing up.
Mm. And Helen used a great analogy that worked for me when she was talking to you, Gary. She used the analogy of the seesaw, that a seesaw is just a spectrum for a particular character or behavior type.
Yeah.
And we can be at either extreme of it or anywhere in between at any given time. It's just an understanding of ultimately where we choose to be on that spectrum. And in transactional analysis, they talk a lot about wanting to empower people to be able to choose. So it's understanding yourself from the perspective of, this is from all of my experiences of life, this is how I would naturally react. This is how I feel I want to react if I'm in an uncontrolled state. However, I can choose any particular reaction. And in relation to the transactions you were talking about, Sophie, where we're not congruent, like we call those ulterior transactions, where you're saying one thing out of your mouth, but everything else about your communication, your psychological communication is something entirely different. And that's why sometimes we have to be aware as managers, when we're talking to one of our members of staff, one of our employees, if we're not congruent, so if we're not saying and behaving the same thing, don't be surprised if that person takes a mixed message and then has a decision to make about which message they should go with. And generally, we're programmed to go with the psychological non-verbalized message to prioritize that over what's actually said. So it is something to be very careful of. But I did love Helen's use of the seesaw, Gary. That really worked for me, and I think that resonated with you as well.
Yes, and as she was talking, the vision in my head, the seesaw one was good, but I think I said this on the cast that it was for me like a graphic equalizer. And so we have these settings that we kind of normally are at, but we're able to slide them up and down. So if people, as you were saying earlier, if people want to present themselves in a certain way, they can say, you know, I need to up the dial on this particular aspect of me so that's showing up. So it's not like a label or these are fixed things. You know, it can be fluid and it can, as I'm sure we'll discuss later, be something that's kind of, you know, you can learn, nurture and build on. And it's interesting what Sophie was saying, because she was saying she felt that you couldn't have that awareness without first having that self-awareness. I slightly disagree with that. I think quite often it's easier for people to spot things in others than themselves. And I wonder whether that, you know, perhaps not in the fullest sense of awareness, but I do think you can pick up on things about other people without always having that awareness about actually you do the same thing. It is often easier to see in others or notice something about others than ourselves, or can be. So for example, if someone is saying, I'm really excited, you know, we should be able to pick up that they're not excited, there's something else. Or if someone says, you know, how are you doing? And the other person says, oh, fine. You know, we should be able to pick up that they're not fine. Mm-hmm. just on a very blunt level. But actually going into that deeper self-awareness and understanding, you know, of, you know, our kind of values, our principles, our buttons, the way we do like to do things, the way we don't like to do things, our strengths, our weaknesses. As you say, having an awareness of all of that gives you that framework for which you can then be more aware of other people and your surroundings, but also then, as you say, apply that and say, right, what bit of my toolkit do I need to use here, or what's the best approach out of A, B, and C options here?
So just moving on to awareness of other then, so something else that really sort of was hammered home with me when listening to you talking to Helen, Gary, was that, you know, she was talking about just from the perspective of what our hands can tell us about us and about others. And I can imagine that after that, because I was certainly doing it, anyone I came across, I was spending an inordinate amount of time looking at their hands. And just so that I could, with the brief few examples that she gave us in the conversation, you know, just to get a better appreciation for, you know, some very high level summarized character traits of that person. And I think we as humans, we're very intuitive when it comes to interacting with others, whether we accept it or not. We always talk about how so little of the communication is actually in what we say. We talk about body language and posture and tone and pitch and all these sorts of things. So I think we're very, very tuned to pick up subliminal messaging that comes from people. And I guess if you want to have an effective transaction with somebody, and you might consider this, if we go back to the coaching or the contracting conversations that we were talking about a few weeks ago, if you want to have a true, open, honest, meaningful, and effective transaction with somebody, you also need to be aware maybe of what might be triggering their reaction as well. Careful not to end up down a psychological rabbit hole with this. Like, this might be a little bit too heavy. When we talk about awareness of other, I guess as well, we need to make sure that we're doing that in as unbiased and with as wide a frame of reference as we possibly can. So I would ask Sophie, for example, in your work that you do with training, when you're transacting in a training setting, how much are you aware of other people and how their behavior is? It's not a sanitized situation is what I mean. You talked about being aware of people's energy levels and stuff like that. How does that work for you?
Well, I guess when I'm training, there's a part of it where I like to encourage the authentic person to arrive in the room to a degree. I think there's a lot of discussion to have around authenticity, but if you're, you know, when you start the session and we have a discussion around how are you feeling, or, you know, how has your journey been to this session, or if it's a session over Zoom, how has your past week been? What's been the good things and the bad thing that's happened? It's just allowing people to download. I think that one then makes me more self-aware of myself and how I'm feeling and how I'm showing up. But secondly, how the people that I'm training might manifest that particular thing in how they then come across. So therefore, I can be quite mindful for that. But because I'm trained in NLP, I'm very much switched on to body language. And actually, sometimes I pay more attention to body language than what I do the actual language the person's using, because I kind of feel like the body language is almost to a certain extent, not always, because it can be controlled, but it's almost the unconscious coming through and really sharing what's going on for that individual. So, you know how you were saying earlier, Gary was saying about, you know, someone that says, oh yeah, you know, I'm fine, but you can quite clearly tell from the tone of their language that they're not. I think we've become quite skilled at hiding that now. And if you were to ask me on this podcast, how are you feeling, Sophie? Like, yeah, I'm good. When actually, eye contact with you, I could be, you know, playing with my hand, not wishing to really engage, which would tell a very different story to how I'm trying to almost fake it till I make it, almost, to try and not come across in that way. To answer your question, Ray, from a training perspective, I try to see everything that's going on with that individual. It's not just the language. For me, it's very much the body language. And like I said before, the congruence of how well that language is matched to their body language. And if it feels slightly out, then that raises something for me. And not that I would necessarily tackle that or deal with that, because it might not be appropriate to, but I would certainly be thinking about the learning environment I'm creating, given what that individual is sharing.
Mm. And I guess as well, like the reality of life is that we're all complex individuals. And if you sit there and think of your own self for a while and how complex, you know, you are, everybody else has that same level of complexity. And often for managers, one of the hardest things to deal with is the fact that you'll never know truly what somebody is thinking in their head. You'll never, a manager who says that they know how their people think, actually, that cannot be strictly true. You may know how somebody will react in a given way based on previous experiences or how they're most likely to react to a particular stimulus. But what you don't know is before that person walked through the door, the walked over the threshold of the workspace that morning, you don't know what experiences they had that may cause them to react in a completely different way to a given trigger. And so that's the unpredictability of people, but also it's the beauty of people, because it then begs you to consider that when you're a manager of people, you have to consider the whole of the person. You're getting, when an employee walks into work that morning, you're getting all the legacy of all of their experiences over the past however long, life, in fact. And you know, that's a real opportunity, because you're able to harness that energy and that creativity and everything. But also with it, you need to be prepared that sometimes people will have a bad day and things will happen that will make that person turn up and respond to particular stimuli in different ways. And as a manager, the requirement to be aware of that, you don't have to, awareness of others is not fully understanding it, the reason behind everything that they do. It's just having an appreciation that for everybody, there are stimuli and there are reactions, triggers and behaviors. And appreciating, the more you get to know your people, the more you'll get to understand how particular triggers trigger them, but to accept as well that on any given day, people can be having a different kind of a day. And so, like, Lisa, in your normal working day, COVID-19 aside, you interact with so many different people on so many different levels. Like, what's your feeling towards your ability to be aware of others?
Good question. I've always thought something Gary said earlier, actually, about knowing. I think previously I've always felt that I'm quite aware of others before realizing that I'm actually any good at it about myself. So yeah, you're right. There's different people and it's different levels, because I interact with business owners and their pressures and the stuff they have going on will be very different to their staff, but I also deal with their staff. So in some ways the dealings with their staff is much more, probably a bit more on a personal level, because the conversations I have with them will be far more relaxed. Sometimes it will be just sort of touching base about the weekend and what they've been up to. And actually even during these last sort of 6 weeks, I feel like I've had a bit more of a responsibility for some of the staff that have been at the office, because it has been staff rather than the business owners. So, and for one of the businesses, we've got a couple of youngsters that are in. So for them, it's been really different. They've had a very different work environment. And although their employers have been great and they've had lots of interaction online, a bit like me being upstairs at the workshop, they've been stuck in an office on their own for weeks and weeks. So I've really made it part of my role, really, to make sure that I go and interact with those people on a regular basis, because I think I've become more aware, especially in the last 3 or 4 weeks, about how this is making me feel. And if I'm feeling it, then they're bound to be feeling the same. So it's been really key to do that. And I think that's not going to change. So it's probably something that's going to become more apparent in the coming weeks, I think, as we go through this big process of people trying to get back to work. But generally, it's like all the time, because I think as manager of a building like I am, it's you're always kind of wanting that heads up as to what's going to happen next. And you can't do that if you don't learn how to become aware of what people are doing and how they're feeling and what's going on with them. So, yeah, it's a big part of my role is to have those conversations with people. Yeah, at least weekly, if not a bit more frequently. But sometimes that comes down to the time that's available to do that. So I imagine that's almost the same for many other managers. It's giving the time to do it and putting the importance on it. I think that's probably it for me. It's making sure that I realise it's really important that I do become aware of how others are feeling and what they've got going on. So that sometimes their behaviour might not be what you expect, but you can perhaps understand it a little bit more. Yeah, I kind of relate that to my teenager. I think that's probably on a level there somewhere. And yeah, I don't always understand him, but it's going through the same process. And yeah, actually encouraging him to be aware of how he's feeling. And I think that's been a big part of his growing up in the last few years, is making him realise that whatever he's feeling, he's allowed to feel. And teaching him actually sometimes to control that in different ways, because it could be that that's how he is at school or in his part-time job or whether he's at home. Yeah, I think especially through times like we're going through right now, I've probably taken more about how I feel and related that much more to other people. And I think that's the only benefit to going through something like all this COVID stuff, is that everyone's been going through it. So on a level, although the concerns and stuff will be different for everybody, depending on their own situations, actually on a level somewhere, we're all feeling the same. And we can all relate to that. So I think that's a good thing. We should be anyway.
Well, I want to come back to the, you know, awareness in the current situation in a minute, because I think that's a good way to sort of sum up the topic, maybe. But just, Gary, for you, with your marketing hat on, how aware are you of the importance of awareness, like from an organizational perspective, the importance of awareness in marketing, the awareness of self, and the awareness of others, whether it's competitors or customers or whatever?
Yeah, sure. I mean, even just in the copywriting, so if I'm just doing a discovery briefing session with a client, obviously you're listening to what they're saying, but you're also trying to sort of pick up the tone and energy and what they're about, because that's part of what has to be presented in the marketing. And yes, marketing is not something which is this exact precise thing. A lot of people profess that they know it all and they know exactly, but we don't. And you know, you do have to adjust to, you know, how the world and the markets and people and sectors are changing. So for certain sectors, you know, like hospitality, for example, they're in a very different space to those who are in perhaps providing technical and software support, for example. So you have to understand where your market and your audience is, because the messages that you've been saying in February just might not be relevant or as relevant now, and you may need to be adjusting it. You might not, but you only know that really by either testing or by asking. So that's why if you see people putting out surveys or quizzes or people putting out on their email lists, tell me how you're thinking is at the moment about topic A, and that's what people are just trying to get, that information, get a feel for what's going on, because, for some businesses there will have been little change, and for others very big changes, and the same for the small businesses and the entrepreneurs and so on. So, getting that understanding of what's happening now and being able to adjust if necessary. And that includes what platforms you might be using. I mean, people will have noticed the flood on social media of, sponsored ads, paid ads, because people are trying to push their stuff through. And again, that's a test. They'll see what the response is. But it just means at the moment there is an increased amount of noise on certain channels. But if you're offering something that, people want, then all of those kind of ads have a chance. But you do have to then back it up.
Mm. You've got to walk the talk.
Yeah, well, it's no good offering something and then people buy it because they'll just want a refund. But also you'll notice that a lot of the if people do have spare money at the moment, there's plenty of offers around because people are just trying to get rid of some old stock that they can't sit on, and stuff that's not shifting. So it's better for them to sell at a slightly lower profit or even a slight loss just so they can make room for new stuff coming through. That will vary for different industries, but certainly there are, for the consumer, there are some bargains to be had. But then again, that's all, part of the economics of that particular business, and your marketing sort of reflect that. But I think it's also interesting to see how some have tried to put a bit more brand value into their messaging. So so you could, for example, say, oh, I'm a holiday company, so how could you possibly do much because there's nothing to sell anybody. But people are, they're taking pre-bookings, but they're also giving people virtual tours of places. They're demonstrating what an experience could be like. So I think all those sort of things are really, really good things for giving people a sense of, the possibilities. It's not going to be like this forever. At some point we will all be able to have a bit of a break or a holiday. We will be able to travel despite any restrictions or limitations.
No more travel, mate. Travel's done. If you can't cycle or row there, you ain't going.
I'm sure certain I think it will create some different offerings for sure, and certainly for home markets. The staycation, that will be a growth area probably for the next couple of years. I think, but also then again we have to balance that with as we've already sort of seen, some of the hotspots and honeypot areas. And the beaches, we do need to be looking at where else can people go, to try and kind of spread the load and for people to think about what they're doing. But all of that is, when people are considering things about responsibility and so on, then that then is, could be translated into, well, I'm now being more aware of the values of companies and how they're operating. So again, they might be looking at, how green is that company? How sustainable? What are you doing to, make your offering, safe and, environmentally good and, good for my family, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be really, really important. And if people aren't going to get that message across well, they're going to be missing out.
And so to bring it sort of into the present day and into context, and you touched on it a bit there, Gary, with regards to the current situation with COVID-19. So the anecdote I would use to sort of put this in context for people is you're an organization and you're looking at bringing your people back to work, say in the office. And so first of all, you need to be self-aware in terms of what is driving that behavior. What is it that makes you determine that that's the best course of action for you? And it may be that, depending on the nature of your business, remote working just doesn't work technically. Or it may be something else. It may be that there's a lack of trust, perhaps, going on there. And it's worth for organizations and individual managers to spend a little bit of time reflecting on what all that is. And then in terms of the, you know, the awareness of others, it's very important to consider that you can make your work premises COVID secure in terms of you do your risk assessment, you put your control measures in place. You've done as much as you reasonably and practically can. But at the end of the day, that doesn't necessarily mean that people feel psychologically safe or indeed physically safe to come back to work. And so you need to be aware of that. You need to be aware of others in terms of that they may not feel comfortable still. Or it may be that, as Lisa, you mentioned before we pressed record, you know, one of the challenges might be that they've got childcare to consider and that's not fully up and running yet. So they, you know, they've got those sorts of pressures to consider. So awareness of others is that just that openness to accept that not everybody necessarily sees things through the same lens as you do, and to be appreciative and open to hearing and understanding and working with people to alleviate some of their anxieties in the current climate. Hopefully that puts it into a little bit of perspective for people about kind of some of the things we mean around awareness.
So that was awareness, folks. I hope you enjoyed that and it inspired a little bit of self-reflection within you and inspired you to start looking and taking account of others and to try to better understand what their triggers are and what their behaviors are. In association to those triggers. It will make all of our lives much more fulfilled. Join us next week when we will continue the conversation around the topic of authenticity. Have a good week, stay safe, be well, and we'll catch you next week.
They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate. Rub the lamp, Aladdin. It's just so.